Neil Catskill.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, Jeffrey Rose from Wild Yarrow Farm in Coshecton, New York, begins another season at his greenhouse, known for diversity in rare and unusual varieties of heirloom and open pollinated vegetables, flowers, and herbs. Stephanie Phillips continues her conversation with Jessica Weiss, founder and executive director of Growing Soul. In her segment, Now You Know, you'll hear about this food waste program designed to remediate climate change through carbon sequestration. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report after news headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Last night was a tough one for the city of London, Kentucky. Powerful storms tore through the state, leaving behind widespread destruction. Mayor Randall Weddle is London's mayor.
Right now, you know, we're just working diligently, the emergency services, all of our first responders still retrieving people out of debris. We do have multiple fatalities at this time.
The storms that hit Kentucky last night were part of a severe weather system that killed 7 people in Missouri, 5 of them in St. Louis. Researchers are going building to building, looking for those who may be trapped or hurt. City officials say more than 5,000 homes were damaged. Power outages stretch from Missouri to Ohio, Virginia, and North Carolina. A labor watchdog has opened an investigation into DOGE's interaction with the National Labor Relations Board. Stephen Fowler reports this comes after NPR's reporting about sensitive data leaving the agency.
The Inspector General for the NLRB is investigating the Department of Government Efficiency's actions at the independent agency. This after both a whistleblower disclosure and NPR reporting revealed reams of sensitive case management data was removed from the NLRB's network. News of the investigation was first reported by FedScoop. More than a dozen federal court cases allege DOGE staffers have unlawfully gained access to sensitive data maintained by federal agencies across the government, including Social Security data, with little explanation about who has access to that data and how that access complies with privacy laws. Stephen Fowler, NPR News, Atlanta.
A Russian drone strike in Ukraine's northeastern Sumy region is being blamed for killing 9 people and injuring 4 others. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says the dead are civilians, and police have posted photos of a nearly destroyed passenger van. The attack came after Moscow and Kyiv failed to agree to a ceasefire at talks in Istanbul. Israeli military says it's begun a massive expansion of its military operations inside Gaza over the past week. Israeli airstrikes are dramatically intensified. Gaza health officials say more than 150 Palestinians have been killed in just the past 24 hours. Here's NPR's Hadil Al-Shalchi reporting.
Israel is calling this new expansion of its military operations in Gaza Gideon's Chariots. The military gave Hamas an ultimatum before launching: surrender or it will increase its strikes. Tens of thousands of Israeli reservists were called up for the operation, and the plan includes displacing a large majority of Gaza's population south. Israel said it would wait to launch Gideon's Chariots until after President Trump ended his trip to the Middle East this week. Trump visited Gulf countries including Saudi Arabia and Qatar, but not Israel. He departed the region on Friday. There was hope that during his visit, there would be a breakthrough in the long-stalled ceasefire talks. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
And you're listening to NPR News.
You hear that? It's a musical picture of Havana late at night, played by the Perez Prado Orchestra. We'll hear it on this week's Retro Cocktail Hour. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music's always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Farm Arts Collective, located on Willow Wisp Organic Farm in Damascus, Pennsylvania. Farm Arts Collective's programs intersect the practices of farming, performance, food, and ecology. FarmArtsCollective.org. From the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan, a publicly supported philanthropic institution. CFOSNY.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, Jeffrey Rose from Wild Yarrow Farm in Coshecton, New York, begins another season at his greenhouse, known for diversity in rare and unusual varieties of heirloom and open pollinated vegetables, flowers, and herbs. Stephanie Phillips continues her conversation with Jessica Weiss, founder and executive director of Growing Soul. In her segment, Now You Know, you'll hear about this food waste program designed to remediate climate change through carbon sequestration. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
Country. I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The moon will be drifting toward two planets as the week progresses. The moon will drift from the south to the east during the week. In the early morning hours of Sunday, the moon will be nearly due south in the sky. At the same time, on Thursday of this week, the moon will be in the east-southeast part of the sky near the planet Saturn. On Thursday, the waning crescent moon will be about 2 degrees to the upper right of Saturn. Saturn is one of the most worthwhile objects to view through a telescope due to its ring system. Currently, Saturn's rings are positioned edge-on to Earth. This means that the rings will appear as a diagonal line going through and beyond the planet. The following morning, the moon will be 3.5 degrees to the upper right of Venus. Like the moon, Venus goes through phases too. Through a telescope, Venus will appear like a third-quarter moon with its left side illuminated. Both Saturn and Venus will be low in the eastern sky in the early morning hours of this week. Saturn will be the first to rise, followed by Venus about 30 minutes later. There will be around a 45-minute window to see the moon and Saturn on Thursday starting at 4 a.m. On Friday, the window is even shorter, at only 15 minutes to see the moon and Venus. The moon will be near Saturn on Thursday and Venus on Friday in the pre-dawn hours. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard reminding you to keep looking up.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr over in Coshecton at Wild Yarrow Farm because it's that most wonderful time of the year to stop in at Jeffrey Rose over here on New Turnpike Road. We're going to say hello for the 2025 season and find out what we should be doing in our garden for those folks in mid-May that want to get their hands in the soil. Hello, Jeffrey. Welcome to another year.
Hi, Rosie. Thanks for coming by again. It's nice to see you. It is an exciting time. It's time to get into the garden and start to get things planted. Of course, fragile things like tomatoes and peppers, we want to hold off on those for a couple of weeks. Even though sometimes the days seem so beautiful, it feels safe, but you're better off to wait a couple of weeks and don't put them in until after Memorial Day. But what can go in now, you can plant leeks and onions and lettuce, kales, collard greens. You can even get some broccoli in, but you might hold off on the heading brassicas also until after Memorial Day, just in case. If you were to plant a tomato plant today, and then there was no frost, and after Memorial Day you planted another, they'd catch up and be the same size in no time. So it's time to get out there. Let's get started, get your hands in the dirt and get some weeding and ready to go.
And what other preparation should go on for the garden beds or the garden soil?
Well, it's always good every year to add additional compost, add some organic fertilizers. If it's compacted, you can loosen it up. I'm not a big fan of deep tilling, but if you can lightly till and break up the surface a bit as you're going, it's a good idea to loosen up the soil and allow the roots to develop.
Why don't you give us a little idea how your winter is and what you want to expect for the spring and summertime now?
Well, it was a cold, dark winter, and spring took a while to get here. It felt like a very long march. It was an endless mud season, it seemed, all the way through April. So the ground was very wet, and in the garden, you can't plant into mud. You have to wait until it's drained off. You can put peas in this time of year, but only if your soil is friable. That is, if it's loose and to your hands. You can, if you reach in and it sticks together like a mud pie, then you'd better wait a little bit. That was the winter. It's behind us now, so let's look forward to the spring. We have lots of stuff planted here, many, many varieties of flowers and herbs. We're going to be building the sunflower spiral again this year, so we're very excited about that. There's an art project going on that will culminate in a performance later in the season. Keep an eye on our Instagram to stay in touch with what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but I want you to review for the audience the name of your farm, your Instagram page, and your website, and your address, your street address.
Thanks, Rosie. We're Wild Yarrow Farm, 321 New Turnpike Road here in Coshecton. Our website is wildyarrowfarm.net, and our Instagram is at Wild Yarrow Farm.
I very much appreciate standing in front of you on this beautiful May day, and I love it that your lawn is surrounding with dandelions. I love dandelions.
Yeah, so do I. Thanks again, Rosie, for coming by. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Good morning. This is Stephanie Phillips with Now You Know for Farm and Country. This morning, I'll be speaking with Jessica Weiss, founder and executive director of Growing Soul. This organization organizes food-saving efforts in Sullivan County. Jessica, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jessica Weiss. I moved to Sullivan County 3 years ago, and 14 years prior to that, I created a nonprofit around zero waste and composting for carbon sequestration to help remediate climate change and to create zero waste so that we were really aware of what true sustainability is. We know that there are people doing wonderful things, but there's certainly more that needs to be done. 40% of all food produced winds up in landfills. We worked for 14 years on the soil trails of the Underground Railroad, creating compost and growing food in it as a legacy project for our community, Sandy Spring, Maryland, that fed the enslaved on their way towards freedom. And we believe that food sovereignty is the most important freedom that you can have. We work to barrier free to make sure that we are neighbors supporting neighbors in need, regardless of what they look like or what they believe, because everybody deserves to eat and to eat healthfully.
Can you explain the food trails of the Underground Railroad? I hadn't heard about that.
In the 1850s, when during the Civil War, Harriet Tubman was a very famous conductor of the Underground Railroad. And basically what they did is they moved the enslaved people off of plantations and they helped to bring them to freedom up in New York and up across to Canada. She was actually in Auburn, New York, is where she would end up bringing people. In my kids went to school at a friend school in Sandy Spring, Maryland, and it's on 140 acres that has a hollowed out tree where they would literally put food so that the people had something to eat on their way towards Sandy Spring, which was the first fresh water when they'd be coming up through from the Eastern Shore. It's a Quaker community. It's a activist community and very much about creating peace amongst neighbors.
Where does your funding come from?
We have private funding. We do have some private donors, but the bulk of our funding comes from the government. In Montgomery County, it was through the Montgomery County Council grants and the Montgomery County County Executive. And since we've been here in New York, it's the DEC, the Department of Environmental Conservation for New York State. And it's a reduction of municipal food scraps. Things have been changing and shifting, and a lot of our funding and a lot of our colleagues' funding comes to the USDA. And we have experience that that has been halted as of late. Everybody's scrambling, and we're, again, that's why we don't have overhead. We don't have to lights on. I've got to be able to have a phone that I can do this work with. But we have very little overhead, and we really do work with leveraging community groups and how we can help fill the gaps. That's what we're working on right now, is who's understaffed. We've eliminated the, through DEI, there's been a lot of things that have been denied. I don't know, but I know at university levels that universities are no longer receiving funding if they have the protests. I don't know where we're going to land. But that's why we are working to make sure that what we do help our colleagues out to make sure that their core mission can still be met. There will always be Sullivan Public Works, so we're getting them to collect food scraps. Right now, they're taking the food scraps to Ulster County, but they want to have a license so that in Monticello, they can build a compost facility. So in order to get that permit, they need to do a proof of concept that people will actually bring them compostables. So that's, again, that's a part of our bucket program, is anywhere I speak, here's a bucket. Do you want to participate in the pilot? Do you even know about the pilot?
Jessica, you mentioned that a business can get tax deductions for 200% of the market value of their food. How does that work?
It's a formula, and it's through the IRS, and I am not an accountant, but I do know that when anybody makes a charitable donation, you get a letter saying thank you for your X, and then you send it to your accountant to figure out what you need for tax deductions. This particular deduction is based on making sure that they keep foods out of the landfill. So there's something called the Good Samaritan Emerson Act, which is that if you give wholesome food in good conscience, if somebody gets sick from that food, you're not liable for it. That's always been a problem to get grocery stores and restaurants to donate. It's like, if it's our brand name thing, we don't want to give our brand name to give in away, or just getting through those hurdles. The enhanced tax deduction was made because, especially with farmers, we want to make sure that we support our farmers. And this was kind of the best way we could make sure that they're supported, is I was just over and over again when I was working with this wholesaler in Maryland, seeing 53-foot trucks of broccoli being rejected from the grocery store because it was only 6 inches long, but they had contracted it needed to be 7 inches long. And it's like, that's 24 pallets of broccoli that they were throwing in the trash. So I'm just hustling around trying to find people who can help us to store the food. So there's the Catskills Food Hub. They started by saving our carcasses for us so we could make our bone broth. And they've been an excellent partner.
Now, in your literature, you mentioned county distribution. What's that?
So that's a centralized distribution where the pantries themselves have a centralized place to pick up food. So any food that I make over and above food that I make in a separate kitchen, as long as I've made it through a legitimate commercial, licensed commercial kitchen with proper training, proper temperatures, I can put it there too. And I'll know that all the food that goes to that food giveaway gets distributed to different pantries and pretty much goes out within a couple of days.
Jessica, can you tell us what grocery stores or manufacturers provide you with packaged goods? And are the goods that you get within the use-by dates?
A lot of that is privately held information. So there are existing pantries that have relationships with existing supermarkets. And so nobody wants to give up their resources. So I wouldn't share publicly who's hooked up with whom. Like the ShopRite in Monticello, that's where I get all my icing buckets from them. And that's the next step of this reach out. So the first 2.5 years was getting the pantries together to create this food security coalition. And
the next step is reaching out to the businesses, the food businesses, and making sure that they're aware of the tax deduction, making sure that they're aware of composting opportunities. There are laws now on the books that if you generate more than, I think it's 1,000 pounds of food every week in food scraps, that you're required to compost if there's a composting facility within 25 miles. Hey, if you know that you've got 4 extra pizzas at the end of the night and you can donate them and actually make money by donating them, the issue is you have to make enough money that the tax deduction's worth it. Businesses, it's usually easier for them to deal with the tax deduction. A lot of farmers, you need to have enough money that the tax deduction is worth it. But if you do need a tax deduction, it's a great way to be able to reduce what you owe to the government.
Jessica, how does your organization decide who gets the food?
Well, we operate barrier-free. So what I try to do is I connect up with the pantries who are giving out food, and I will ask them, are you giving food to a certain population? You know, each different pantry, we want them to be giving locally, but we don't reject any pantry from getting food from us. I don't reject any people who come through the listserv and say that they want to come and pick up a watermelon, as long as they're willing to come to me and I'm not driving it all over the place.
They're picking up right here at the Cornell Cooperative?
At the Catskills Food Hub, which is just around the corner. So basically the center of all things food in Liberty is between the Cornell Cooperative, A Single Bite, and the Catskills Food Hub.
What exactly do they get? When you hand out food, do you consider the capacity to cook for themselves?
That's, again, why we're trying to think about, do we need to create a Meals on Wheels program for just adults and not just for seniors? A lot of what we get is fresh produce, and we'll get cases and cases of cabbage, and we might give it to one family that shares with another, or one family might want, like, oh, great, we're going to make slaw. And they'll get as many as they want. So we will like load up a truck and drive it around to a community, and people take what they want. And when it's gone, we go back to the food hub and get more. Or we wait for next week when it's delivered. But the pantries have very consistent clientele. They have certain days that they deliver. It's very organized. And it's not that they reject anybody, but some people are working specifically with veterans, or are working specifically with teenage mothers, or are working specifically with a certain religion. And that's up to them to distribute. But we give to all of the givers equally.
So you don't discriminate. You don't care. You'll give it to anybody who needs it.
And we don't ask for how much money you make. If you have the courage, if you have the capacity to ask for food, we want to be able to give you food.
Do you have paid staff, or do you have volunteers? How can people get involved?
We work with 4-H. So 4-H is a program of Cornell Cooperative. So Barbara Moran is a paid employee of Cornell Cooperative, and she teaches at the schools as part of their 4-H outreach program. When we get this grant from Liberty, we will, it all depends on finances, right? So we have money to pay someone to run the composting, the anaerobic digester, and we ebb and flow with what we can create as far as what we have to pay people, but we have a huge volunteer opportunity. So like our in-kind, and as part of our grant, we're required to have an in-kind match of 25%. So if we have a $200,000 grant, we're required to have a $50,000 match in kind. So people donate their time. Cornell's loaning us the rental space for where they would be able to rent space for the horse. Usually we have our office. Anybody donating their time to us or sharing their opportunities, we working out of the kitchen, that kind of thing, that counts as in-kind. So you're supposed to have 25% of in-kind donations, and we have 233% of in-kind donations. That for every dollar that you donate to Growing Soul, you're getting $2 worth of work out of it.
How do you recruit your volunteers?
Right now, the funder programs are at the schools, so we're reaching to students. We'll be at the county fair, so 12,000 people go through the Grahamsville Fair every summer. I've been talking with Jamie at Sullivan Community College, and we're talking about creating a workforce development program where we will teach interns in the kitchen and after they've been with us for a certain number of hours, they would be eligible to take the test for ServSafe if they pass it. Then they could move up to being paid staff. I think we're looking at, I guess, $16 an hour is just a very low tech starting, but up to between like $16 an hour and $25 or $30 an hour. That's the next step, is the workforce development. It's true, we have done a lot in the 2 years that we've been here, but there's so much more in terms of really creating an integrated system that financially flows properly and has the education. And Sullivan is an amazing space, and they have a farm on their land, and they're in the groove, and they understand the need for this. So
at the community college.
At the community college. And Jamie's in charge of workforce development, and we know that that's the piece. We want to get people to work. I mean, it's wonderful to get volunteers, and that's really where we look. There's not consistency for community service credits throughout the schools. Like, each superintendent gets to kind of figure out how many work hours that the kids need to put in. And in Montgomery County, it was 100 hours in middle school, and then you need another 100 hours in high school. Here, I don't even know what the requirements are. Occasionally, I know that, oh, I'm about to graduate and I don't have any hours. Do you have anything for me to do? A lot of calls come in that way to for our volunteers. And we usually do take, if you need continuing education credits for nursing and the healthcare, that's why we had like the nurses volunteer for us. I'd like to reach out to Boys and Girls Clubs and different things. Right now, we're just honing in on making sure we have a tight curriculum, and that Barbara, because Barbara's our one teacher, really, who moves around and can teach these things. So what we would really like to do, I feel, our next step is who's going to be Barbara's assistant and mentor, and who can she mentor into being an Earth Defenders teacher. And that's going to be our next paid position, is who comes in and to teach the teachers.
So now you know how a small organization can have a big impact on food waste. My guest this morning was Jessica Weiss, founder and executive director of Growing Soul. And this has been Stephanie Phillips for Farm and Country.
Allison Stratton is the youth programmer for the Western Sullivan Public Library Junior Master Gardeners. Here she is with a creative class assignment that inspires community service.
Here at the Narrowsburg Library, we have a seed library. Can you imagine what a seed library is?
It's a library full of seeds.
It's a place where people can give their seeds, their old leftover seeds, and then people can go and take those seeds and use them in their garden. And then at the end of the season, they save their seeds and bring them back to the library. They sign them out. It's a really wonderful thing. We want people to know about our seed library. So I made these blank posters, and I'm going to give everybody a couple of posters. You're going to decorate them. So you're taking this home. Everybody take two posters. And your job is to decorate the poster and then put the poster up somewhere in your community. You can put it on a church bulletin board, on the bulletin board at PECS. You can put it up at a coffee shop that you go to with your family. You can put it up at school. No. I want you to just take a picture. I want you to go with your grown-up and have your grown-up take a picture and have them email me the picture just so that I know that you did it, okay? And you've got until the next time we meet to do this, okay? I will also send out a blank version of this to your grown-up. I'll send out the blank copy and you can make as many as you want. And you can put them up all over the community, wherever you want, because we just want to get the word out that we have the seed library. And this is part of your service project for being a part of Junior Master Gardeners. And that's one of the most important parts of Junior Master Gardeners, is giving back to the community. So this is our community service project for this month, okay?
More information about the Junior Master Gardener program is available at WSPLonline.org. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week, with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard, Stephanie Phillips, and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Jeffrey Rose from Wild Yarrow Farm in Coshecton, New York, Jessica Weiss, founder and executive director of Growing Soul, and Callison Stratton, youth programmer for the Western Sullivan Public Library. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, WJFFradio.org. We are Radio Catskill, local news, culture, conversations, and NPR.